serving veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes, our conversation with soon-to-be centenarian Victor Avakian of Fresno, California. He served with the 679th Medical Collecting Company in the Pacific during World War II. He was drafted 6 months before America entered the war he was in until after it was finished, so he saw a few things. He saw a glimpse of some of the more than 406,000 Americans who were killed while serving in the war, not to mention the millions more from other countries, namely Japan, the enemy, and all the places he found himself. So, Victor, how did you handle that ever-present death and destruction?
It's hard to handle it. You don't think about it at the present time. It hits you a little later on. You don't absorb it right away. But you see that what has happened to people, you can't believe.
Did you guys have to clean some of that up?
No, I personally didn't get in on any of that, no.
But you were aware of it and you saw some of it.
When I was in the Philippines, they had a place called Ipo Dam that held a lot of water reserve for the area. And they told me that there was a lot of Japs up there that were all cleaned out or killed, and they hadn't picked them up yet. I said, I want to go up there and take a look at that. And I went up there with a Jeep. There's dead Japanese laying all over. And I'm all up there all alone, and all of a sudden, out of nowhere, here comes a P-51 Mustang, 50 feet above the ground. I said, oh my God, where the hell did he come from? Luckily, all the army vehicles, the Jeeps, had a star on the hood painted on. He could see it's American. Boy, I waved to him like mad, and he gave me this when he left. He saw that I was who it was, but I couldn't believe it. They hadn't picked up the Japanese yet. They're laying there dead. Flies all over them and everything.
When I mentioned over 406,000 Americans who died in the war, I have to ask, were there any guys that you knew, whether from here or in the service, that were among those who were killed?
No. You see people laying there, you know, these crapped out. I'll never forget this one particular. It was a tree, and there was a guy laying there. He looked like he was in good shape, but he was dead, a young man. I stood there and looked at that guy for a while. I wonder what his poor family is going to hear about when they see this young man here. There was no visible scars on him. He must have been shot, but he was laying there, hadn't been picked up yet. I can still vision that under that tree.
Well, and the other thing that comes to mind, when you look at a scene like that, when you see a young man who seems to have his whole life in front of him and you realize that he's gone, do you ever look at that and say, hey, that could be me?
Oh, yeah, I thought about it. He looked about my age, too, just laying there. Looks like he'd be in perfect shape, but he was dead.
And when I asked if you knew any one of those 406,000 Americans who made the ultimate sacrifice in World War II, I don't know that I framed the question right. I didn't mean just guys who served with you over there, but also who you knew. And the Avakian family would become a Gold Star family because of what happened to your cousin, Luther Avakian, who was serving with the 353rd Fighter Group.
My cousin Luther is my second cousin, and he was a fighter pilot in World War II, flew a P-47 Thunderbolt. He did a lot of strapping and everything. After a mission coming home, he was hit by shrapnel, and he was in a formation, from what I heard. And he dropped out of formation, and I kept hollering for him to get back in formation. And his father talked to one of the boys that flew with him after World War II. He found out where he was. He talked to him. He said, we kept hollering to him, get back in formation, get back in formation. He said, all I could hear him saying was, I hear the angels singing. I hear the angels singing. And he cracked up in France somewhere. But he was killed. He was burnt. They claim... My cousin later on was an infantry over there, and he found out the town that he was crashed in, and he talked to somebody that saw the crash. He said he was burned on the whole right side of his body, was all burned.
Did they ever bring his body back, or is he buried over there?
He's buried in Fresno. They brought his body back. He was a second lieutenant.
And you were in the Pacific when this happened?
Yeah, I was in the Pacific.
Did you hear about it?
I heard about it, yeah. My father wrote me a letter and told me that he was killed. In fact, Luther wrote me a letter when I was in Kiska, told me how good it was, how nice it was to fly a P-47. And when he graduated from flight school, I understand, he and three other guys buzzed a primary school, and they got fined $6,000 for it. So they sent him overseas. They buzzed the primary fool because they were in advance already. They wanted to go overseas, and they wouldn't ship him overseas. Well, they shipped him right away.
Well, he must have been a pretty sharp guy to be able to be a fighter pilot so young.
That's right, yeah, he was pretty sharp.
Have you ever wondered in all the years since what his life might have been like had he made it through the war?
I don't have no idea what he'd do when he come out. He was a good guy, a nice boy. Well, his mother died of a broken heart. When he died, she just went to hell.
Well, how did it affect you to be in the Pacific in a war zone and get the news that your cousin had been killed?
Well, I felt bad about it. What could I do about it? I felt real bad, but what else could I do? His luck ran out, that's all. And on a mission coming back, in fact. Not, they'd already done the mission, but coming back in formation, he got hit with shrapnel.
Well, you were in from before America got into World War II until after World War II came to an end. Do you remember when the word started to spread that Japan was surrendering?
Yeah, I remember that. We were in line, the Chow line. The word got out that they had dropped an atomic bomb on them. The Japs have given up. The war's we're gonna get to go home pretty quick. That felt good. We'll have to put up with this very longer, in other words. And they start within a couple of weeks after that, we noticed that they were giving discharges to guys or sending them home. A few at a time out of each group, in other words, got to go. And they went by the time that you were in the service as to when they would let you go.
So what was it like coming back home to California?
The biggest thing is on the ship, you're put in like sardines, you understand? All you can do is wait to get home to think this will all be behind you before you know it. But you feel kind of sad too because you've left a lot of guys that were still good that you met, people that you knew, you understand? And I went to some of the reunions after the war. It was nice.
When you got back, was it easy to put the war behind you, or did you find that difficult?
A little difficult at first, because I had to change my way of living again, completely different. Had to watch your mouth.
Well, and a lot of guys have shared that, you know, they would experience flashbacks, you know, seeing that dead guy under the tree again, or those Japanese bodies, or some of the things that a young man shouldn't have to see, but you did. Is that something that you ever dealt with?
No, I never dealt with it. I can still remember it, but it hadn't really bothered me that much. I don't sit and dwell on that, but I do remember it. I can still vision it.
And what'd you do when you got back here to Fresno?
I had a girlfriend. I got married. What else is there to do? Try to make a life for yourself the best you can. It's quite an adjustment. You know, you get used to living almost 5 years one way, and now you got to change your ways, in other words. When you're in the service, you're around men all the time, you understand? And you talk different, in other words.
And you said that, you know, I had a girlfriend, and then I got married. We didn't talk about that before you shipped out. So had you guys discussed getting married before you went overseas?
I said to myself, I'll never get married while I'm overseas or anywhere while I'm in service, because I wouldn't want to leave somebody, get killed or something, and leave a widow or anything. So I wouldn't get married.
Was she writing you letters while you were over there?
Yeah, she would write letters. And my letters were very simple, too. They're very simple. Guys would write pages and pages. I got nothing to say.
Well, I'm sure your two children and your five grandchildren and your six great-grandchildren, or is it seven, they're pretty happy that you came back and you married.
I've had a very good marriage. I was lucky I got a very good wife. So I've had a very colorful life, but I never got into any trouble with anything. What else am I going to do? What's an old man going to do? Tell me.
Well, you must be doing something. What's your secret to being so sharp and in such good shape at almost 100?
Well, as I say, God's been very good to me. I thank him every day. And I've got a wonderful family. I've got a wonderful daughter-in-law there that's very good to me. First-class lady. I have no problem with any of my kids, but none of them gave me any trouble. So I've been very lucky. That's got a lot to do with how you survive.
And when you look back on World War II and what you did and what so many others that you knew, what they did, what would you say you're most proud of?
I don't know what to say. We have a different element of youth today than when I was growing up. Their values are all different. This is a new generation. It's in another world. They want everything given to them. They think they deserve everything right away. Everything should be given to them. You know what they ought to do with a lot of these guys that are young, they're raised in all this hell? Physically take them up and put them in the Army. Put them in a line outfit, not in an outfit that does clerical work. A line outfit. You're stuck here whether you like it or not. And not in the States, in a foreign country somewhere. You see what it's like. Everything's too easy for them.
You spent nearly 5 years in the Army when the world was at stake, when freedom was at stake, when it was, you know, it was a crazy place to be. What did those 5 years in the Army do for you? What did you get out of it?
I learned a lot of things. Learned how to get along with people and learned the value of what I had. Even if it was old, it had value to me. I learned that from experience. When you're in the service, it's a different world completely. You got to watch your mouth. You got to smart off. Every time you smart off, they got something to counteract for it. You pay dear for it. You learn that.
So you got a pretty good education in the Army.
Best you could ever get. There's not a university in this world that's going to teach you what I learned about people. Nothing surprises me as to what I hear about somebody doing something. I might be surprised that a certain person would do that, but as to what he'd come with, it wouldn't surprise me. Out of that 130 guys, every kind of a guy in the world was there. Well, I had basic values that I had learned at home, but there I met the world there, boy. Now, I really met the world there.
If there's anything else that you want to say, feel free. I don't want to forget to say thank you. Thank you for serving our country, and thank you for telling us the story that only you could tell us.
Well, thank you for coming here and wanting to know. I appreciate that, too.
Well, and there's something else I want to know. I don't know if it's an easy question to answer, but none of your kids or grandkids or great-grandkids lived through World War II. I didn't live through it. Most of the people listening right now didn't live through it. What do you think those of us who weren't around then should understand about why it matters and what you guys did?
I don't know. I have to think about that a while. I don't know. I can't answer that right away. Every generation goes through a different phase in growing up. This generation that's here now has never really ever faced real hardship. It's all talk. They've always had everything they wanted, or most everything. It was available in every way. So it's just a story to them, the many of them. I look around and even my grandkids, as good as they are, they really don't know what it's like to not have, and nothing is there for you. They've had a good life growing up as children, good standard of living, always never were hungry or anything. But it's just a story to them. And unless you really go through it, and I don't mean for 10 or 20 days, when it's like that for years, you get a different feeling. Now, I'm like I am. I hate to waste stuff. Even though it's plentiful, I don't like to waste stuff. It's born in me. I'll never forget. I built this house in 1948, had it built. It cost $10,150 to build this house. Well, I had saved some money, and my wife had saved some money. We put $2,500 down, and the payments were $42 a month for 20 years.
Does it mean anything to you to reach that century mark, to turn 100?
All I can say is I've had a very good life, but like I told you before, I'll tell everybody, wasn't for God Almighty, I'd never make it. He helps me in everything.
That is Victor Avakian, who will celebrate his 100th birthday November 10th in his native Fresno, California, with a collection of well-wishers that will include his son, Vernon.
Well, what amazes me is the fact that for many, many years, he told my mother, because of all of the, you know, illnesses that he got contracted during World War II, that he wasn't going to last very long. As of right now, he is literally the last man standing. I mean, all of his cousins, all of his relatives, everybody that he's ever known has passed away. Mm-hmm. And I'm fortunate to still have him. And he's got all of his mind and faculties, and he does not in any way, shape, or form look the age that he actually is. So I've been extremely fortunate.
So what are you guys going to do for his 100th birthday?
Well, on his birthday, November 10th, we are going to have a big birthday party for him. He's invited well over 100 people, and hopefully the majority of them will show up, and we'll have a high old time. H-Y-E, high old time.
The stories that he was just telling about World War II, I'm guessing you've heard most, if not all of them. Is there something you've heard him describe that you think about and you say, boy, I don't know how I'd handle being in that situation?
Yeah, some of the stories that he's told are basically the kind of crap that he actually had to go through. There are some anecdotal things that he has expressed to me that would stay with me. And when I think about it, the fact that it still is vivid in his mind, and he tells it with such gusto, that I guess I'm fortunate that I was able to hear it from him firsthand. I know I love him. I know my sister loves him. I don't know of any person that he's had contact with that doesn't have a good thing to say about him. And what more can you ask of an individual?
That's Vernon Avakian talking about his father, Victor. That 100th birthday celebration will be a blast, I'm sure, just as this last hour has been. Unpredictable, at times hilarious, but also haunting. May we never underestimate what our veterans go through on our behalf. Remember to check out photos of Mr. Avakian then and now at hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page. I'm Paul Leffler, hoping you'll join us again next time when we're reminded again through the stories of our veterans that freedom is not free.